Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
All right, let me know what you make of that conversation. It's Manzopa. It's going to be on from the 30th. And it's really, really worth it. Let me tell you, it's really, really worth it. So go get your tickets at the Market Theatre. I want us to go to this conversation now. I think last week we had a conversation with Stellenbosch University. They had conducted a study that was highlighting how frustrated teachers were for various reasons. And they were looking to retire early. And this was across the board, if you remember. Not necessarily in low-fee-paying schools and non-fee-paying schools, all across the board, where teachers were just completely exhausted, frustrated, and the like. And they stated various reasons. You know, some obviously were the environment they were working in, but mostly were just not coping with what it requires for you to teach a child that's traumatized, a child that comes from an abusive environment, a child that's hungry, all the social ills, we can name them. And they just didn't think they had the capacity to do that. And the call was, can we not do something in training teachers to assist them in equipping them with dealing with some of the challenges that students bring to school. Now, something interesting has happened. OLAG, which is Oprah Winfrey Leadership Academy for Girls, has been working on a program which attempts to deal with this little matter. And it's obviously not little, I make, you know, light of the matter, but quite a big issue in our society. Let's talk to Dumisani Shabalala, who's head of academics at Oprah Leadership Academy for Girls, Oprah Winfrey Leadership Academy for Girls, to talk to us about what they've been working on and the results thereof. Thank you very much, Dumisani, for making time for us. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Pumelo, and good evening to your listeners.
I just highlighted earlier on, you know, some of the issues. We've been talking about this for a while, but I was absolutely thrilled to see that OLAG has been working on a program of sorts. Maybe give us a sense of what that entails.
I think Pumelo, for me to dive deep into the matter, I'll begin by just uttering a few statements that are common in classroom.
Yes.
And not maybe in classrooms, but statements that are uttered every day as we engage with kids or as we engage with each other.
Yeah.
You know, often when something happens, you hear someone say, "What were you thinking? Were you thinking at all? Were you thinking at all? Clearly, you were not thinking." These are some of the statements.
Where are you?
That are common.
Where are you?
Where are you?
Yeah.
Where are you? Do you hear what I just said? You know,
Wake up.
You know, these are statements that are uttered every day, and they speak to something deeper that we all see, but we are afraid to talk about. Mm. Right. Cognition itself mm-hmm. is state dependent.
Mm.
The fact that you're an A child, it doesn't mean that you'll be an A child every time, mm-hmm. right? And sometimes if I say, calm down, if you don't have the capacity to calm down, there's nothing you can do to calm yourself down.
Mm.
You know, so we know about these issues, but we just don't want to put our finger on them. And as a school, we begin to think about what is actually happening. Because I think we must agree, Pumelo, that the goal of education is really to alter the brain,
mm-hmm.
right? All we're trying to do is to shape the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you want to work with the brain, you must understand the brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to fix cars, you must know how cars work,
mm.
you know? And so it is rather sad and strange that teachers walk into classroom with very constrained understanding of how the brain actually works,
mm-hmm.
how it develops, and how it processes information. So the very system we're trying to alter, we don't know much about it.
Mm. Such an important point, because you make the point that chronic trauma disrupts memory, scatters attention, and traps emotion. So until I've dealt with the trauma or what I'm going through in my own life, it's going to be difficult for me to retain information and to do what you've just said, you know, alter the brain positively.
Spot on. 100% spot on. And so that's our premise as a school, is that we want to ensure that our teachers are fully equipped, or they understand how the brain actually works. So when they come on site, it is mandatory for everyone to go through a mandatory training.
Mm-hmm.
And then every week we've got a collaboration session, not every week, every fortnight,
yes,
where we meet and talk about academic matters.
Yes.
And not just trauma, academic matters in general, and then trauma would feature there. We've aligned ourselves with the work by Dr. Bruce Perry from the US,
yes,
who really developed the neurosequential model. So, Pimelo, I can just talk about it briefly and say to you, the brain itself is a very complex organ.
Mm.
It is really complex, right? There's a lot that happens in one's brain. And even neuroscientists today, they're still researching the brain.
Mm.
So no one can come and say, I fully understand the brain.
Mm.
So what we need a heuristic that can best present a brain in ways that are palatable for everyday person, right? But we must be clear that all heuristics that are there, they are essentially wrong. I mean, think of it as modeling. I'm a math teacher by profession. When you do mathematical model,
yes,
suppose you are modeling a cat,
yeah,
and the tail keeps on sticking out. So
yes,
you assume the cat doesn't have a tail. So your model is not actually of a cat. It's of a cat without a tail. So what I'm trying to say to you is that we need to find a heuristic that is simple enough to model the brain so that we can understand. So the neurosequential model offers a very palatable heuristic of the brain.
Yeah.
Think of it as a tip down triangle with four regions, where the bottom region is a brainstem. It's the first part of the brain that develops and moves up to the last part of the brain, which is the cortex, which is what we want to influence. So as you and I are engaging now, I'm appealing to your cortex, your logic and your reasoning. However, that information doesn't leave my mouth and go straight into your cortex. It must go through your brainstem, be processed, and then move into the middle part of the brain where your emotions are evoked, where you can decide to listen to me or not listen to me, decide I'm boring or not boring, I'm exciting.
Mm.
And then, only then, it can reach your cortex. So that's the basic idea behind trauma-sensitive work, is to understand how the brain works and realize when kids are in tune and when kids are not paying attention, and finding ways to reel them back in so that they can pay attention.
This is interesting, because obviously we've spoken about the fact, you know, just basic teacher training from university, colleges, people don't come to, you know, the classroom with these skills. So they're going to have to adjust somewhat. But, you know, young people will also tell you, oh, maths is boring. And maybe they're not saying maths is boring, they're saying Dumisani is boring. You know what I'm saying? So because we are such different personalities, you may be excellent, but boring. How then do you make it interesting so that it moves from that point of interest to being, as you said, you know, it must move with that journey of the brain where I want to retain that information?
Yeah, so Pimelo, as people, if you study animals in general, you go to the Kruger one day, look at different species, you study how they behave and how they socialize.
Yes.
You realize that as a human being, we are very social beings. So the way we behave, unlike a leopard that is a solo, human beings, we work as groups, right?
Yeah.
So we work as a group, we don't work in solo. So part of teaching, it's important that you connect with your kids. Now, connection offers two things, right? One, it offers safety.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean safety in the sense of having a security.
I get you.
Safety in the sense of a kid's being comfortable to become vulnerable in front of you.
Yes.
And then secondly, that safety also offers a second thing, which is reward, right? When you feel safe, your brain fires for reward.
Mm.
So we make an effort to make our lessons interesting. I'm arguing we should make them safe and rewarding.
And I mean, I suppose it's a lesson even for us who are not teachers, who want to connect better with your children, you know, that you must create a safe environment first. Then, you know, you get to the level where you can hear each other. If the environment is not safe between the two of you, then, you know, possibly conflict, more conflict will arise.
Spot on. I mean, I can give you another example. If you stay, look at a young child, right, a female, when they cry, a mom would normally rock them, right?
Yeah.
That motion of rocking the baby is regulating the child.
Got you.
Right? It is, there's some pattern and rhythm that says to the brain, calm down. And when you hold the child close to your chest as a mom, you're saying you're in a safe environment,
yes.
Right? So when we engage in the classroom, we talk about regulate first, right? We first regulate the kids, right? Then we relate with them, connect with them, and then we can reason with them.
So you
cannot teach for 45 minutes and all you're doing, you're talking and you keep on saying, do you understand? The most stupid question you can ever ask kids, do you understand? Of course they'll say yes, right? Even when they've got a misconception, if you say you understand, they'll say yes. And you'll only discover tomorrow when you mark the homework that they did not get me.
I am going to come to your classes. I want to see something. I want to see how I can retain maths, which I don't know how to. So I'm curious about your methods of regulating. I know of a few pilot programs that were started a couple of years ago, but, you know, because the funding didn't work out. And I think they were attempting to do the same thing where at primary school level, they had started programs to start the children with yoga classes at the beginning of the beginning of the day. And the results were astronomical. I mean, they were incredible. Children in, you know, really difficult circumstances had started behaving better because they were calmer. They, you know, their day started better. What results are you getting?
Pamela, I want to go to your question first before answering what results are you getting. You ask about the kind of regulation.
Yes.
Activities we
yes.
do. I want to start there,
yeah.
and go off tangent. Mm. I mean, I can talk about what we do, make them breathe in five, breathe out five. We all know those things, right?
Yes.
But I want to talk about stress. Stress, primarily, is a good thing. If there was no stress, you were not going to come and do the work that you're doing. In fact, yeah. Stress forced you to prepare. It forced me to prepare. Stress is a good thing.
Mm.
However, erratic stress is a bad thing.
Mm.
So how do you begin to regulate kids more than just doing this breathe in, breathe out yoga? And I'm not saying we shouldn't do it. We should do it. It's important. In fact, I advocate that we do it. In fact, in our school, we do those kind of regulatory activities. But we must begin to make the school day predictive.
Mm.
Predictable.
Mm-hmm.
We must make it predictable.
Mm.
So our school days are not as predictable. They're erratic. Some days classes will go on, other days they will not go on. There will be two lessons before break and then seven lessons after break. But if you begin to lock the day, right, the kids know that there's going to be two lessons, a break, then there'll be five, whatever, right? They know every Friday I'm writing a test. That predictability for me is regulating.
Mm.
We dysregulate kids by not being predictive.
Mm.
They don't know. Today says going to smile, tomorrow is going to be angry. You know, they constantly on the alert, right? So we're contributing to their trauma instead of helping them to calm and to be vulnerable in front of us.
Mm. Gosh, and it's such small things, you know, because if one is aware that just the emotions that you bring to the table in the classroom can impact how they receive the work that they're doing. You know, as you're saying, you are contributing, apart from the stresses they bring, you may be contributing to the anxiety.
Put on. We say a dysregulated adults can never regulate a dysregulated child.
Gosh.
And more than that, there's even research that talk about mirror neurons, right? You must do this exercise one day when you're in the studio. Just smile at your colleagues. You'll see their smile. It's mirror neurons. If you're having a good day and you're smiling, people tend to lift up. There's a whole research about it, which I don't want to talk about it because I'm not a neuroscientist, but go and research mirror neurons. You know, so the energies we bring into our classrooms, they are the ones that first begin to dysregulate children.
Sure. So the results that you're getting,
Well, we're getting outstanding results. First of all, in terms of behavioral infringements in our code of conduct, less and less kids are becoming delinquent. In terms of academic results, I don't want to even talk about that. I know that the point of trauma education is not necessarily directly related to academic results, but the academic results in our school, they speak for themselves. We don't even question 100% bachelors anymore. It's given. We ask ourselves how many distinctions. We don't even question these 100% bachelors. You know, I see other schools, they celebrate, which is good, but for us, it's a given.
So obviously not all our children can come to Oleg, so that's a problem. But you're sharing this knowledge with other colleagues, and maybe, you know, how has it been received?
I think the education space and then the whole sector is really warming up to the program. I think primarily we must agree that in 1994, part of the things that we did, the good things we did away with corporal punishment. And I'm not convinced that we gave teachers enough resources to deal with issues in the classroom outside of corporal punishment. And people have been waiting for something that they can use that is divorced from old and ancient and archaic techniques, something that is simple. You know, I'm not advocating that we become neuroscientists and we understand the brain and become therapists. We're not therapists. We are teachers, but we're working with the brain. We need to adhere to the rules of neurobiology and neuroscience.
You have, as I said, you know, you've been sharing it with other colleagues, and you're saying obviously there is starting to be some level of buy-in. Why isn't this becoming rapidly something that everybody adapts? Do you have a sense of what the challenges are?
I think we need to push the research. PML, we need to put more research. I think what research does, it's got power to influence policy. And even schools like us and you guys as media, the work that you're doing, hosting me today, asking me to come into, it's very good because it's making the right noise so that we can begin to influence policy. I feel strongly that it must become part of pre-teacher service training.
I really appreciate you taking us through all of this, and you know, all the best. It's really quite an impressive, and I think it's encouraging to know that there is light at the end of the tunnel. I was speaking to one of your colleagues last week, where I said, you know, I'm so discouraged. You know, what do we do? Because by the time the teachers, you know, come into the classroom after university, one feels that they're not properly capacitated for all the troubles. But this is encouraging, and this is really something that I think, as you said, we need to be talking about a bit more. So I appreciate you bringing this to our attention, and thank you very, very much, Dumisane. And I'm also going to apply to be your student, just to see if this works.
Thank you very much, Pimela.
I'm not a math student, but I want to try for myself to see if regulating me will help me understand that better.
Thank you very much, Peter. I'm looking forward to receiving your application.
Thanks to Misani. Misani Jamalala, Head of Academics at Oprah Winfrey Leadership Academy for Girls.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.